Blog Talk Radio.
We put up numbers like this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kill, Jimmy, PJ, and B. Austin, the hot block commander.
Give it to you how you want it in the 1 or 2 hour show. To keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level. Bold with them topics, sort of like some rebels. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five show on prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. From sports medicine to sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the world in Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys diversified and educated.
Everybody, today is August 21st, 2012, which would be the 76th birthday of the late great basketball legend Wilt Chamberlain. You are once again rocking with the best. You are once again live in the War Room, the Wilt Chamberlain edition, that is, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, alongside me at the Wilt Roundtable this evening are my partners Jimmy Williams and Akil Bayon. And later in the hour, we'll be joined by Philly basketball guru Sonny Hill. Paul Johnson and B. Austin will be back with us on Thursday for the big show. But tonight, it's all about the big Philadelphian from Overbrook High, the Kansas Jayhawks, the Philadelphia Warriors, the Los Angeles Lakers, and your Philadelphia 76ers. We'll pay tribute to our fellow native Philadelphian, widely recognized by older basketball fans as the greatest of all time, by talking a little bit about the man, the player, the legend, the myth, and hearing some accounts from his good friend Sonny. As always, we want to hear from our listeners today, so please chime in during this condensed show, either in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call in and talk to us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get started, we just want to make sure you catch our regular show, like we said, at its regular time, Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So right after we give out this pertinent information, let's jump right in. What's up, fellas? How y'all doing this evening before we even give out this information?
Man, you know I'm chilling.
Chilling? Yeah.
Man. Chilling right. Good. It's good to be on the air on a Tuesday to pay tribute to Big Wilt the Stilt.
Yeah, the Big Dipper, the Stilt, whatever else they want to call him. Some people call him the GOAT. But real quick before we jump into that, of course, we got to let everybody know how they can get in contact with us. You can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, and inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise, and then click the Blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, to subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices. Watch our latest videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, just sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts because we know you have those. And while you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room today, just like we do every week during the show. So to call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Press 1 is like raising your hand. So go ahead and raise your hand because we might just call on you. So get in that chat room or on Facebook and get your questions ready for Sonny Hill, and we'll try to get those on the air when he comes on. So let's get into it.
No doubt. Yeah, man. You know, this show is dedicated to one Wilt Chamberlain. So let's just jump right into it. By the way, we're going to talk about Wilt the Player, and this is brought to you by Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks. Kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for a free trial. Go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you'll be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free. You can have someone read to you. And speaking of Wilt, there are a lot of like sports books, you know, mentioning Wilt Chamberlain on Audible, and several of us have read some of them, you know, debating his legend, how great he was. So let's just jump right into that. Let's talk about Wilt's era. You know, a lot of times people talk about Wilt and they try to slander him by talking about the number of teams. And I've heard the argument on both sides. Some people say that that's what makes him so great because he played with better players considering there were less teams. There's also this myth that Wilt played against, you know, a bunch of small guys, which is really not true, but it's one of them. It's one of those things that's been passed down generation after generation. What do you guys think about that when you think of Wilt's legacy?
Hey, well, first of all, kind of like what you alluded to, Jimmy, it seems like, you know, it depends on what area you're talking about and, you know, who's in the conversation that you're talking with, because it seems like everyone thinks that their era is the end-all, be-all of basketball. So when we speak with people in our age bracket, you know, we talk about the greatest players of all time. You know, some people show respect, but some people rarely even bring Wilt to the conversation because they only think back to what they know and what they saw. But, you know, in this business, we got to be historians of the game. So you got to know who came before the guys that you grew up watching, you grew up loving, and things like that. And if Wilt's name doesn't come up in your conversation, then you really shouldn't call yourself a basketball connoisseur or aficionado or anything. Like, his name has to come up.
Absolutely. Because I've had this argument several times. People say, I actually had this argument, believe it or not, with someone about 2 weeks ago who told me that Wilt Chamberlain played against a bunch of 5'11 white guys. Mm-hmm. And it drives me crazy considering that if you just do a little bit of research, you'll actually see that in Wilt's day, there were more big men than there are now. I mean,
more
think
quality
about it,
big men. Yeah.
Quality, and funny thing is, even quantity, because when you look at the league now, there really isn't that. I mean, Wilt played against a bunch of 7-footers, guys that were 6'11", 6'10". And like you said, the quality was even better, considering some of the guys he played against, like Walt Bellamy, Nate Thurman. I mean, these guys are Hall of Famers. And later on in his career against Kareem and
Bill
Elvin
Russell.
Hayes. But go ahead, though.
And Jimmy.
Bill, I wasn't even mentioning Bill Russell. I didn't get to him yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
one thing, my take on the whole Wilt and the era comparison, I believe to the less knowledgeable basketball fan, and that's watching highlight tapes and sees the records, they'll say, okay, Wilt was just taller than everybody else, and he played against a bunch of guys who were not, you know, I guess that good or can challenge him. But to the knowledgeable basketball fan that goes back, as you two gentlemen alluded to, and looks at the competition, who he played against, and the way he still dominated against some all-time greats, and then you read about, okay, man, Wilt had a fadeaway jumper. He was one of the fastest guys on the court. You know, he can deadlift this, squat that. You start seeing that, man, Wilt, not only did he dominate then, but he probably would have dominated more than a lot of people would have given him credit for today, just by going back and doing research.
I agree with that. From an athletic standpoint, when you look at some of the numbers, I'm not talking about basketball numbers. I'm talking about numbers that you talk about, such as what he squatted, how fast he ran, the amount of different sports he was able to play. It's no way I don't think he would dominate in any era. You know, he's a tremendous athlete. Outside of being a basketball player, just being an athlete, it's phenomenal when you look at some of the things. And then when you talk about his basketball numbers, you know, I'm just like just blown away. I don't know if we want to jump into that now. But, I mean, we can't get into that now in terms of his career stats. I mean, because he has some amazing statistical feats.
Yeah.
What stands out to you, I mean, amongst all the crazy numbers?
Well, we'll just go with his career first because, I mean, actually, you know, because when you stay around the game pretty long, you know, the stuff that he did kind of leveled itself out at the end. But, you know, yeah, after we do these career numbers, we can talk about some of the more impressive things he did. But he averaged 30.1 points per game. That's second all time as far as averages goes to Michael Jordan. He averaged 22.9 rebounds per game. Like, and sometimes I'll look at the stature of some of the players today, and I wonder what their excuse is for not being able to do something like this. Like, why couldn't Shaquille O'Neal average 20 rebounds a game? I never really understood that. So he averaged 30.1, 22.9 rebounds and 4.4 assists, and that's coming from your center. But Jimmy asked, like, what were some of the highlights that stood out? Definitely
in
that,
your opinion, you know,
definitely that 1961-62 season where he averaged 50 and 25.7.
That to me is beyond belief because, you know, it's funny. When you talk about Wilt Chamberlain, everybody has either a story or a number that stands out. Most of them, many say the 100-point game. Some say averaging 50. Also the stat of playing that many minutes. I think he averaged over 48 minutes in the season, which is like, how do you
exactly
do that?
Without fouling out. Jimmy,
you know,
real quick,
like the 100, of course, is impressive. But I'm more impressed with the average of 50 points because if somebody averages 50 points, then you know they can put up 100 if they try.
I mean, everybody has their different stat. Some people talk about his success with the women and ladies. But Wilt, when you talk about Wilt, you know, it's just that 50 points is amazing. That and also his assist numbers. When doing research for the show, just looking at the different numbers, I mean, we've all heard the legend of how he said he was going to lead the league in assists. We know that. But just every season, his assist numbers impressed me, considering look at the big men that play now or played in the 90s or the 80s. I mean, this guy was an all-around player. So I don't really care what generation you put him in or when you play. I mean, some of Wilt's numbers, let's be honest, I mean, I couldn't put this up playing against my shadow.
The biggest stat that's forgotten about is the fact that steals and blocks were not recorded during that time. So the mind wanders to have you think, man, would he have averaged 10 blocks a game and averaging a triple-double?
You know what?
And five, and seven?
He may have been the first to average that triple-double, really. But like you said, it wasn't recorded. It definitely wasn't.
And then with his quickness, was he jumping in the passing lane? I mean, theoretically, he could have averaged 50 points, 27 rebounds, 11 steals, and 11 blocks if it were recorded.
and nobody knows. Like, it's possible, and nobody knows. Like what Jimmy said, like, to average this many points, like, to score like that, he said he couldn't do it against his shadow. The only real stat that I probably could do against my shadow is the rebounds from all the shots I would miss. But I probably can get a good 25, 26 rebounds.
Another thing that I find interesting is some people say, well, he was dominated by Bill Russell. But when you go back and look at the numbers again, you know, we love doing research and looking up statistics. He averaged like 29 and 29 against Russell, and they matched up 142 times. He averaged 29 and 29.
You might as well just say 30 and 30. You might as well just round it up.
I mean, so that's not even true. It's just funny because, you know, as time goes on, like you said, everybody thinks that their generation is the best generation, and they pass along these stories, which when you do your research are just not true. His name has to be mentioned amongst the greatest to ever play the game, regardless.
I mean it has to be somewhere 1, 2, or 3, in my opinion.
One thing I didn't know about Wilt is that even in his 40s, in 50s, teams were still trying to sign him, like at 40 and 45 and 50. I even heard in 82, the owner of the Sixers, Harold Katz, was trying to bring Wilt back at, like, I don't know, 45 or something.
Yeah,
he was trying to get over that hump. Laker hump.
Pair him up with Doc. Wilt and Doc.
I guess they're like, all right, we pulled off the Moses deal, so we don't need him no more. But
imagine this, Wilt, Moses, and Doc. Imagine that front line.
Put Moses at the 4, Andrew Tony at the 2.
I mean, there were points
when Wilt was, you know, he was older, and they would interview him. This is like probably early in the Shaquille O'Neal era, where they would ask Wilt Chamberlain, do you think you could play right now? And he said, I could probably average like 30 right now at the league. And, you know, a lot of people kind of, you know, brushed that off, you know, thought he was just being cocky. But, you know, speculation, we never got to find out. But there are people out there who believe that it's probably possible. So it would have been great to see. Definitely would have been great to see. Jimmy, you mentioned his rivalry This is what we hear all the time. His rivalry with Bill Russell. And just like you, I hear a lot of people who put Bill Russell over him when they go, you know, when they talk about their all-time greats. And we all know why. Because, you know, I think it's the Michael Jordan effect. You know, because a lot of the people that we speak to weren't around to even see Bill Russell play. So I think they're just looking now like at the fact that Bill Russell has 11 titles. So he must have been, you know, the greatest player back then. But I think when that comparison is done, I think a lot of times Wilt suffers from the fact that Bill Russell had a better team and he won a bunch of championships. Because like you said,
you know,
in the head-to-head matchups, 30-30, that's not being dominated by anybody. You know?
Yeah, it definitely isn't. But it's also a thing where, like, when you look at winning a champion, there's so many variables that come into play, whether it's the fact that he has the better team. In team sports in general, there's so many variables. It's not like an individual sport where you can just count championships as accomplishments. We always know that, you know, there are great players who just don't win championships for whatever reason. I mean, but let's not – people act as if Wilt doesn't have, you know, multiple championships. And, you know, it's one of them things where as time goes on, like you said, the Michael Jordan effect, everybody thinks that it's all about just winning championship. But from the standpoint of being a great basketball player, and I've talked to people that say that Russell was the better player, and I say, okay, well, if you're drafting now in their prime, who would you take on your team? And everybody says Wilt. Well, how's Russell a better player?
Except for Bill Simmons.
Before him.
Except for Bill Simmons.
Well he's a homer. He's a Celtic fan, so he doesn't count.
Yeah, Bill Simmons, I want to say he made – I mean, and I like Bill Simmons. You know, we read all of his work. He's a funny guy. But like Jimmy said, he's one of the biggest Boston homers you're ever going to meet. So when he talks and when he wrote that book, he kind of made Wilt seem, I'm not going to say average, but in comparison to Bill Russell, you know, his thoughts about Wilt Chamberlain weren't too favorable. And
it's also coming from a Celtics fan.
No, it's coming from a huge Celtics fan. I remember reading that book. I remember I was on the plane one time reading, and I actually got kind of upset. I had to stop reading that chapter for a minute because I think he was just taking it a little too far. Like, okay, we know you're a Celtics fan. We know you're going to take the homer route, say Bill Russell was better, but I just think he was slighting Wilt a little too much in that.
Yeah, I definitely do. But we also know, like, I have, and I'm pretty sure you guys have had experience with older family members, whether it be uncles or whoever. Like, I have uncles who, it doesn't matter what anybody does, doesn't matter what Mike does, no one will ever be greater than Wilt Chamberlain. No one will ever be greater than Jim Brown, and no one will ever be greater than Muhammad Ali. Those three, amongst my older family members, are like, you know, those guys are like untouchable regardless of what happens, you know, especially considering we're from Philadelphia.
That's the Holy Trinity.
that's like the Holy Trinity of the older members of my family. Like, yo, it doesn't matter what you do, Jim Brown is just that guy, Wilt Chamberlain, and also Muhammad Ali. Like, you know, so we've all had experience with that, where people have their bias. But at the end of the day, just looking at his accomplishments from a statistical standpoint, also, like I said, from an athletic standpoint, that's what impressed me more than even his stats. When you start reading about him playing volleyball and being a track star, you know, at one time challenging Ali, and he was dead serious about it. When you start reading these things, you say, you know, this guy was just a tremendous athlete, all-around athlete.
He's in the Volleyball Hall of Fame. Like, how do you make the Volleyball Hall of Fame?
No, I was listening. I was watching the beach volleyball broadcast at this year's Olympics, and one of the commentators asked the other guy. He was like, well, you know, they were talking about who's supposedly the greatest beach volleyball player of all time right now. So they said a name, and then the older commentator says to him, well, I bet you never guess who was considered the greatest beach volleyball player of all time before him. And he couldn't guess, so he told him Wilt Chamberlain, and the other guy started laughing. And he's like, no, I'm serious. Like, he was considered the greatest beach volleyball player of all time. I mean, how can he not? If you go out there and play and you're that tall, you're that athletic, what are you going to do?
So basically, he probably could have played one-on-two.
just at the net, spiking the whole time, just spiking. But
okay. Now, before we bring our featured guest on today to celebrate Wilt Chamberlain's birthday, who would have been turning 76 today, and with us being from Philadelphia, is obviously his connection with the Philadelphia 76ers. We have a message from one of our sponsors. This segment is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the DirecTV logo and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. Now, before we bring our guest on, I'd just like to say this guest has been very influential in the life of many young gentlemen and older gentlemen now through basketball by the Sunny Hill League and the High School League, the Futures League, the College League, the Baker League. He even sits on the panel with the McDonald's All-American team, and just a basketball guru and figure worldwide. And he's also a good friend. He was a good friend of Wilt Chamberlain. And without further ado, everyone, we have our guest, Sonny Hill.
How are you?
How you doing, Coach Hill? Pretty good.
Hey,
pretty
doing
good.
Fantastic.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Now, I'll start off with the first question we have here. How old were you when you first met Wilt Chamberlain, and how did you two first meet?
We're about 12 years old, and we're the same age. I'm born July the 22nd, 1936. He's born August the 21st, 1936. We both graduated from high school at the same time in 1955. He was at Overbrook and I was at Northeast. I first met Wilt when we were about 12 years old. We were playing in the old Baptist Church League.
Wow. Okay. That's nice.
How tall was he at 12 years old?
He's probably about 6'8", man.
Wow.
Sheesh.
So we've heard all the myths and the legends about Wilt being a terrific all-around athlete, and, you know, I'm not sure if you were just listening there, but we heard him reference. Okay,
we heard
him reference at the Olympics this year being the greatest beach volleyball player of a certain era. So what are some of the feats in any sport that Wilt accomplished that many people might not know about?
It's interesting you brought that up because on my radio show this past Sunday, I spoke about Wilt's birthday, but I talked about it from the other side, which most people are not even aware of. I had his sister on, Barbara Chamberlain Lewis. I had Zelda Spolster from the NBA, and I had Mike Richmond, who is the son of Ike Richmond, who was the co-owner of the Philadelphia 76ers when they purchased them from Syracuse, which is now the Philadelphia 76er team. And we talked about that, and one of the things that his sister wrote and spoke about is that he also plays polo, water polo.
Oh, wow.
What?
What?
Wow. That's crazy. That's
and
crazy.
You notice when I speak to people like you and you are overwhelmed, it never phases me because I've seen it. I know what it's really all about. I was more than a decent basketball player myself. I'm in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. I played 10 years in the Old Eastern Basketball League.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm talking from playing against great players. And as I know every basketball player basically from 1946 to where we are right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, we actually had Herb Adderley on. And,
I raised Herb Adderley. I told you that. I raised Herb. So go ahead.
Okay. he actually mentioned you and Wilt Chamberlain. Speaking of playing in high school, you guys want to play that clip so we can let him hear what Herb said about Sonny and Wilt?
Yeah, you can go ahead and play that clip.
Mention that you jumped center. You jumped center playing with Sonny Hill at Northeast. Y'all lost one game, and you jumped center against Wilt Chamberlain when y'all lost to Overbrook.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, basketball was and still is my favorite sport. And when I left Roosevelt Junior High School, Washington Lane, and Musgrave, I went to Germantown High School, and I went out for the basketball team, and they said because they had the A and B back then where you graduated midterm. So basketball season was already going on. So when I went out for the team, the coach there told me that it was too late, that they already had the team and everything. So the following week, I transferred to Northeast at 8th and Lehigh. And Guy Rogers, great player. He was my idol. And when I ended up at Northeast, it was still midterm. I went out for the team. I had no problem. I ended up starting. And like I said, yeah, Sonny Hill was on that team. A guy named T. Parham, Bobby Young, Milt Davis, just to name a few of those guys. But anyway, ended up playing against Wilkes. This was 1955. Our team went 11-1, and the game we lost was to Overbrook and Wilkes. They were 12-0 that year. And I remember jumping center against Wilkes because I was the center on the team and also brought the ball up court like a point guard. And Wilkes scored 48 points against us. They beat us by like 10 points because we had a really good team, and so did they. But Wilkes was the, you know, the factor. And there was a guy named Bill Shefsky. Bill Shefsky was the beat writer for the Philadelphia Daily News for high school sports. And on the back page, it had Adderley holds Wilt to 48. Coach Ike Willie was really upset about that because he thought it was kind of embarrassing for me and everybody else. So when he finally saw Bill Shefsky, you know, he said, why would you want to put something like this and blast it on the back page? So Bill Shefsky told our coach, Ike Willie, he said, hey, Wilt scored 90 points against Roxbury the week before, so Herb holding 48 is a hell of a thing.
That's pretty good.
Oh, man, yeah, that was a clip from the Herb Adderley show. Coach Hill, I have another question for you. We've heard all of the stories of the great rivalry, mainly from the pro Bill Russell's perspective. In your unbiased opinion, how did Wilt compare to Bill Russell?
Well, first off, it would be a bias only because I grew up with Wilt. Wilt's not my hero. He is just someone who is my contemporary. Bill Russell and I have an extremely close relationship, as I do with many of the Boston Celtics. To compare the two, you'd have to look at it from a different perspective. There is no athlete that has ever played team sport that has had the desire and the drive to win in the manner of Bill Russell. With all that being said, the other side of it is when you think about who put the NBA on the map, when you think about who is the player who made it possible for all the other players of his era and now moving forward to make the money that they're making, when Wilt came into the league in 1959-60, there was only two players in the league that made $20,000. Bob Bennett and Bob Cousy. Wilt made over $75,000 his first year, and attendance in the NBA went up close to 30%. So now, when you factor in 11 championships in 13 years will never be equal by anybody in history of team sport. That's Bill Russell. But when you look who changed the game, who dominated the game, Wilt Chamberlain has been retired for 40 years, he still holds 96 records in the record book.
Wow. It's crazy when you say it like that. I have a question for you, Coach. Do you agree with Wolf's statement when he said, if I had known that you would have made it such a big deal about the scoring record, I would have blown it out the water? I mean, was he that good? Could he just basically do whatever he wanted to do?
Well, here again, you asked me a question, and I can only give you an answer. And one of the first books that Wilt wrote, if you go and get the book, there's a paragraph in there. It says, Sonny Hill told me never to change my game.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Now, Coach Hill, in the essence of pure speculation, how do you think Wilt would have fared in the current NBA? And physically, how would he have fared against someone like Shaquille O'Neal?
The first one is, do you know who Bob Lanier is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know who Bob Lanier is?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. You saw Bob Lanier. You know him from the Milwaukee Bucks. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Correct. Probably. He played with the Pistons, too, right?
But you don't
but
know
that's
him
not
from
what,
the Pistons.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't know him from the Pistons.
All I'm asking
yeah.
you to do is respond. Don't give me any of all the other stuff. when
okay.
Bob Lanier, just listen. You asked me to be on your show. I'm giving you some information. When Bob Lanier was at the end of his career, now Bob Lanier had a bad leg from the time he came into the NBA because Chris Ford from Villanova undercut him when he was playing in the NCAA when he was at St. Bonaventure. So he never had two solid legs to play on. Bob Lanier is 6'11", probably played at 280 or 290. Do you know who Moses Malone is?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
All right, you know what Moses did to guys when he played, particularly Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. When he got him down low, he punished him. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. You know what the bow is? When you put the elbow on the guy and you tell us as far as you go?
Yeah.
Okay. This is what...
Hello?
Hello?
Did he? I think he dropped.
Yeah, I think we dropped. Get the coach back on.
Okay. Let's okay. Yeah, y'all can rap and I'll call him.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah, get coach back all on. Right. Yeah, he's giving us a history lesson right now, man. But
I think we got is this Austin on the line? Austin, you're on. Hey. Be Austin.
Yo, what's going on, fellas?
What's up?
Man, I'm listening to Uncle Sonny Hill give it to us.
I know. He's still getting him back on the line now. So, what you got any input real quick before you get back
I
on the line?
I still don't believe that West Philly Wilt existed. I'm still sticking to my guns. That dude is yo, he's almost like a mythical being.
He's like Sasquatch?
Yeah, man. He like Sasquatch, man. who's more revolutionary to their sport? Or to athletics, Wilt or Usain Bolt?
Wow.
I mean,
I think we would have to go. Seriously, and not just because this is the Wilt Chamberlain hour here. I think we would have to go with Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, Usain Bolt, I mean, he's kind of taken what's been done and taken it to another level. I think Wilt was just a totally different monster when he came along.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, and also Usain runs. I mean, I'm not trying to be smart or nothing, but he just runs.
All human beings can run, bro.
He's just faster than everybody else.
Most human beings
can run. No disrespect to any of our track listeners, because we do have a following of people who run track, and I'm not disrespecting you guys at all. But
Wilt was a track and field athlete, by the way.
Yeah, I think Wilt might have beat Usain anyway.
Will ran under 10.5 in the 100. Did y'all know that?
Come on, man.
No, I'm dead serious.
No, I didn't know that, but it's like it's funny now because I'm kind of on your page. Every time you hear about him, it's about another statistical feat that is like, come on, man. I feel like we're talking about the most interesting man ever.
Are you back on?
I'm here.
Okay, all right, fellas. Coach Hill's back on the line.
All right, let me pick up on the story I was getting ready to tell you.
Okay.
Moses Malone is the most dominant center of his era and one of the most physical and the hardest worker. Bob Lanier put the bow on it, and Moses took his game 18 feet from the basket. Did not come inside at all. Moses will tell you this. So you asked me a question about how Wilt would pair or fare against the players of this era. Bob Lanier then told me a story about, 12 or 13 years ago at an All-Star game. I said, Bob, if Wilt Chamberlain were playing today, this is when you had some centers, David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing, Shaquille O'Neal. You had that group, the last big group of centers. Mm-hmm. He said, Sonny, 70. No, he didn't mean 70 in one game. He meant average 70 against these guys. Now, 70? I'll give you another story. Bob Lanier, player with the Detroit Pistons. You know how they keep block shots today?
Yeah.
You know how they keep block shots back? Well, they didn't keep block shots back in the day. but Wilt had a computer mind. He played a game against the Detroit Pistons. He blocked in one game 26 shots. And see, it's hard for your radio listening audience and even you guys as younger guys to fathom what I'm saying, because he was greater than the game. And those of us who grew up with him, we used to get on him a lot and say, you know, Dip, you're not playing physical enough. You know, Dip, when they put their hand over the rim like that, you should break it off. He said, no, I don't want to hurt anybody.
Man. So he was a gentle giant.
Always, because see, he recognized, and you asked a question about how physical.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called innate strength. That's strength from within. And I run across people who say to me, well, Shaquille weighed 50 to 75 pounds more than Wilt, and he would be able to do whatever. Wilt would take Shaquille O'Neal and move him around like he was a rag doll. Let me give you an example. Wilt could take the ball to the basket and get ready to go up and dunk the ball. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, ask Wayne Emery. You know who Wayne Emery is?
Heard of the name.
Wayne Emery played for the Cincinnati Royals when Oscar Robertson was there. Wayne Emery became the first black to be a general manager in the NBA. He was also with Cleveland. He's an executive now with Toronto. He's 6'8". When he played about 275 or 280. He used to be on Wilt's arms going up for a dunk. This is no lie. And Wilt would say to him basically, what floor are you getting off, big fella, before I dunk you in the ball?
Oh, man.
These are not
myths.
This is truisms.
Wow.
This is what I know.
Well, Coach, we hear a lot about Wilt, and people's opinion of him is that he was a selfish player and he was all about his stats. Like, can you speak to that a little bit? Is there any truth to that, or is that what you get when you can afford that?
Mm-hmm. I grew up playing with Wilt and against Wilt. You know what he would say when we played together? He said, shoot it. I'm going to get it off the board anyhow. You're going to miss over 50% of your shots. We just talked about he had over 24,000 rebounds.
Yeah.
He was selfish only because the team that he played for, and people don't know this, Eddie Gottlieb, who owned the Philadelphia Warriors, was a promoter. He promoted the old Negro League games. He promoted other sports events. And in order for him to make money to pay his bills, he thought the best way to do it was to have guys who led the league in scoring. He had Joe Fulks, who was the Babe Ruth of basketball. After that, he had Paul Arison, one of the 50 greatest players of all time. He had Neil Johnston, who also led the league in scoring. So when he got Wilt, he wanted Wilt to score because it brought people in. Do you know the Boston Celtics didn't sell out with all the winning that they did? It was Wilt who brought the attendance. It wasn't Russell and the Celtics. People came to see him do what he was doing. That's why I said to him, Dip, never change your game. Because people were on him about, well, you're selfish. Okay, if I'm selfish, I'll lead the league in assists. Nobody has ever been able to do this in the history of basketball. Lead the league in scoring, rebound, and assist, and if they had block shots, he and Russell averaged between 10 and 12 block shots a game in their heyday.
Wow.
His last season in the NBA, he averaged 18 rebounds a game with the Los Angeles Lakers. He walked away from the game without any fanfare. He just said, I'm finished.
Yeah, that's amazing. His numbers, every time I hear a new number, it's just like, it's amazing. I tell you, when I was a kid, and the older people in my family would talk about Wilt, it was almost as if they were talking about Bigfoot. I was like, somebody did, like, scored 100 points or averaged 50. It's just beyond belief.
But that's not the big thing. Everybody looks at the 100-point game and the 50-point season. That's not what he did was the greatest thing in that season.
What do you think it would be?
He averaged over 48 minutes a game. Yeah. You that's didn't true. Hear that, see? It gets right past most people. No human being can do that. When you start a 48-point game, you average 100 points, I mean, just 400. You average over 50 in the same season. You average 27 rebounds and 10 to 12 block shots. How can you physically do that? Nobody can do that.
Yeah, that is amazing. Coach Hill, this is B. Austin. I've heard also stories of Wilt's track and field feats. What sort of track and field athlete was Wilt?
It was his favorite sport, and the reason was his favorite sport, it was able to get him away from being the 7-foot-plus player, and people saying, oh, the only reason you can do so-and-so and so is because you're tall. So what he did throughout his life was to do these things, to prove to people that I can do something other than. You know, Will had arm wrestling matches with individuals. They talked, I just saw today on ESPN, they had the special on there when he scored the 100 points, which I happened to be in. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but I happened to be in it. And Al Adams, who played with him as one of his closest friends, talked about the movie Conan and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of the strongest guys of his era. That night, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So Absolutely. Arnold Schwarzenegger was in the room lifting this weight. And he was like, oh, look at what I can do. So Wilt walked over, picked up the same weight that he was picking up, and just picked it up just one time, two times, three times, four times, five times, and threw it down. Arnold Schwarzenegger never came back into the weight room after that because of Wilt.
Man.
This is after he retired. He met Conan when he was playing. He made Conan after he had retired.
Man.
Oh man, I've heard the stories.
If there ever was a Paul Bunyan, his name would be Wilt Chamberlain. And the thing that you could never, I heard you guys when you came on and your opening was of the players of that era and whatever. You can never understand his greatness because he was greater than his greatness, which means it all has to be a myth.
Yeah.
If Wilt played today against who? Dwight Howard?
Andrew Bynum?
They would be in foul trouble in the first 5 minutes of the game. Wilt never fouled out a game in his whole pro career.
That's another
record.
He
only fouled out one game in his whole basketball career, and that's when he was a teenager and a guy told him, he said, Wilt, if you foul out, you have no value to your team. So that tells you his mental intellect. He never fouled out of a game. He averaged 46 minutes a game in his career. The next player to him is 44 minutes, which is Bill Russell, who played one end of the floor. And the next player to him is Oscar Robertson at 42 minutes a game. Hello?
Not. Okay, Coach, we got one question from the chat room, and then we can get you out of here after that. Monty215 in our chat room asked, do the constant comparisons between Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain as the greatest of all time, do those comparisons bother you at all?
No, because, see, it's a matter of how you look at it. If you say winning, who is the winner?
MJ.
No, it's not. It's Bill Russell.
No, listen.
They always configure it the way they want it to be. Mm-hmm. If you say Michael Jordan is a winner, he won 6 times. Russell won 11 championships in 13 years. He won 13 championships in 15 years, the last two at the University of San Francisco. They had a 57-game win streak. Bill Russell don't spend 5 minutes with anybody on anything. Bill Russell on my radio show spent 2 hours with me. He said, Sonny, in 21 years of playing basketball, he won 21 championships.
Mm.
So who's the greatest when it comes to winning? I didn't hear you.
Oh, Bill Russell.
Yeah, let's look. And Michael is my guy. These are my all three of these guys are my guys.
Not what you meant between Michael and Wilt. That's what I think you meant.
But you see, you can't do this to me. I've been in broadcast for over 45 years.
Gotcha.
I'm telling you the story the way it needs to be told so that your regular listeners can listen. It's three individuals. Winning is Bill Russell. If you say Michael Jordan, he won six times. Did he win as many as Russell? No. So he can't be as great as Russell if he didn't win. Well, who owns the record book? Who owns the record book?
Well,
that's your answer. That's your answer.
You've got to
understand the modern media. Most people never saw Wilt because it was all black and white. If Wilt was playing today, he would own the league, not a franchise. You couldn't pay him enough.
Yeah, how about that? I mean,
here's one last one for you. I'll give you this one. It was on the radio show Sunday. They were making a sneaker commercial. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Willis Reed, and Wilt. The sneaker company called Wilt up and said, we want you to make this commercial. Wilt said, okay, how much money? You got $200,000? They said, no, we're only paying these guys $50,000. He said, well, you won't get me. So they called him back. They said, we got $200,000, but we want you to do one thing. Don't tell anybody. Russell, Kareem, and Willis Reed, don't tell them that they're only getting $50,000. If you don't know the story, you don't know the story. You called and asked me to be on.
Yeah, I mean, hey,
you called and said you wanted me to be on.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is the truth.
Good.
That's what we want.
Yo,
we need the truth.
We need the truth, Coach Hill. We need the truth.
The truth and nothing but the truth and the truth
shall set you free.
And nobody confronts me in terms of what I'm saying nationally, internationally, and whatever goes on. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
So how does it make you feel when they give, like, a lot of the younger guys, when they start calling them great and talk about their greatness before they really accomplish anything? I mean, considering you saw, you know, Wilt and Bill Russell in their heyday, and you see these young guys now, especially the big men that play now, and they talk about them as if they're great without any accomplishment.
Whoa. You said big men. There are no big men.
This is true.
They don't play in the center. The only guy that we got about three or four guys in the whole league that play in the paint offensively, in the paint defensively. Andrew Bynum is one. Dwight Howard is one. Everybody else drifts. They'll come outside 15-foot jump shots. You know, Will had a great shot outside. He used to win games at horse. But you never saw it because he knew where his value was.
True.
He could shoot outside. A lot of things he could do. That's why he enjoyed playing with the Globetrotters. How many guys you think can get in the circle of the Globetrotters and do what they do? He's 7'1".
This is true.
So you show what kind of dexterity, what kind of hand-eye coordination, what kind of rhythm he had. The circle for the Globetrotters is one of the most enduring things in the history of basketball, and he did that.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And Coach Hill, this is Akil. You know, it's definitely a great pleasure having you on our show, and we'd like to give you some time to promote anything you'd like to promote. Tell people when they can listen to your show and other broadcasts that you might have. Go ahead, Coach Hill.
I want to promote you guys from Philadelphia Central High School, Howard University. You're young guys who are doing great things. You're going to college. You're getting additional education, and you're in a field that you enjoy, and it's kudos to you. It's not about me. It's about those before me who put me where I am. If it wasn't for them, I couldn't do what I'm doing. So what I want you to remember is as you move forward, always reach back and help other individuals. That's all.
Absolutely.
Man, Coach Hill, we appreciate you, man. We appreciate
Thank you.
That.
Thank you so much.
We're honored.
All right.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks again. That's Sunny Hill, everybody.
Sunny Hill.
Hall of Famer Sonny Hill.
Hall of Famer Sonny Hill, the legend in his own right.
Yeah, how about that? That's amazing, man. Like, I tell you, when you hear these stories, guys, it's just like it blows me
Yo,
away.
Yo, man, I quit. I don't have any more rap.
Yeah, like. Yeah, absolutely. Give him a round of applause. Like, Dev, when you hear these stories, like, what is it? How does it make you feel when you hear these stories that, you know, from people who actually are there?
Well, first of all, talking to Sonny Hill makes you feel like you're sitting on your grandfather's knee. Listen to old stories.
Shut up, boy.
I told Son on several occasions, but
you asked me to tell the story.
But no, but seriously, like all the stuff that we, like all the research we've done and all the feats and everything that we've heard of and found on our own, you know, they kind of pale in comparison to someone who's seen it with his own eyes, you know what I mean? Somebody who's close to the situation, not just Will Chamberlain, but a lot of other great basketball players, pioneers of the game, you know.
You know what's funny, though? I kind of see that now when I talk sports, like with younger cats specifically, I'll call them the LeBron generation. It's to the point where they're like discredit what Mike did. You know what I'm saying? And we didn't see Will, but we saw Mike, right?
Right.
So it's like to the next generation, they're talking about, I mean, especially after this last championship, I've seen young cats call him the greatest ever, and they're like discredit Mike. You know, it's one of those things where as time goes on, it's going to continue.
But you know why they even feel comfortable doing that, though? Because the media outlets today, for shock value, make comparisons and allow
ESPN the media.
They ran a thing all last week about, you know, if LeBron is better than Michael Jordan, stuff like that. So it feeds people an opportunity to speak kind of stuff.
There's no objectivity in the media any longer, and so when you go into things with a bias for the sake of selling and creating sensational, just sensational content for the sake of influencing the masses, and we all know sheeple need a positive influence as opposed to a negative influence. So you have a lot of folks that could stand up and do what we're doing, which is, even though, you know, we have our biases, but we acknowledge those biases and then we dig deep into the facts, because before anything, our obligation to our audience and to our listeners is to be informative, to be educational, and then entertaining. I think they take those two things, the two first things out, and they make it primarily about entertainment. And selling.
I mean, the fact that you can even ask that question, whether LeBron is better than Jordan, I mean, that question is crazy at this point.
And yeah, because it has nothing to do with talent. It's really about accomplishment. It's like disrespectful when you look at the. It's like asking someone is a sixth grader better than a 12th grader at something. How can he be?
Someday, come to the public school system in Philly. Anyway, because when people bring up to me, you know what I tell them, right?
There is no way that LeBron will ever beat Jordan. Call me when LeBron has 6 championships.
That's your only argument?
It's the only argument I need, Sean!
I'll tell you
one thing for me, like being from the area, yo, like Will kind of, you know, Will, Kobe, those guys, they kind of make you, like, proud in a time when, you know, there's not a lot to be proud of with Philadelphia itself. Like, you know, it kind of hits you in the heart.
Hey, B. Austin, real quick. It's funny because, like, when you have arguments with, like, certain cities and, you know, all you got to say is Wilt, what?
Yeah.
Then, oh, Kobe, what? That's our two. Wilt's our center. So who else you bringing to the table?
It ends the argument. I mean, when you look, when you look at basketball, our area, like, by far, like, I know I have arguments with New Yorkers all the time who try to tell me they can put together a better team from their local talent. But once you bring up Wilt, that, like, ends the discussion. It's over with.
Because they're still trying to claim Mike. He was there for, like, a month and a half. They'll try and claim Mike. But, no, Jim, it doesn't end the discussion. It ends the logical discussion because they keep trying. People keep trying. You know what I mean? But you know, we heard a lot of things from Sonny. You know, we wanted to talk a little bit more about the man real quick since we got like 2 minutes left. And, you know, Sonny answered the question about him being selfish and all of that. What a lot of people talk about is something that he wrote in his book, that he slept with over 20,000 women. I mean, I know you're a superstar, you know what I'm saying? He was one of the most known people on the planet. But do you guys think that it's possible in one lifetime to sleep with over 20,000 women?
Yes, based on the lifestyle that we led at a HBCU, Howard University, I believe that is possible.
20,000 women, though, man. Let's get serious here for a minute. 20,000 women.
I mean, if you live in a...
When did he practice? When did he practice? Was he like AI? Like, he didn't practice? Like, while they were practicing?
I mean, the thing about it is, like, how many was he doing at a time, though? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
oh, no,
it was obviously more than one.
Given that it had to
Look, this is my bus. Either you getting on my bus or you not. We'll probably did like 20, you know. You know what I mean? Like, listen, man. After hearing all the numbers that Wilt put up, I mean, Wilt's a dominant arm wrestler, javelin thrower.
He ran a 10-5, 10-4, and 100.
He ran a 10-5. He averaged 50, put up 100. He could bench
like
600 pounds. Yo, I think, yo, from now on, no more Chuck Norris jokes, yo. They all Wilt jokes now. What's up?
For real. Hey, Jimmy, I did some research, and, I mean, I found this out today. I was, doing more research on Wilt Chamberlain's legacy. And, you know, they said he played, you know, so many games in college. And when he was at Kansas in his junior year, he missed 3 games due to a urinary tract infection. And automatically I was like, I wonder if it was
we know what that was,
or if it was just random. Or and I was like, seriously?
Listen, man.
Like, man.
Man, I mean, the stories you hear about Wilt are crazy, man. I heard Wilt is the only person to close a revolving door.
Close the revolving door. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well,
I have another story. He was in high school at Overbrook, and the 1953 MVP of the NCAA Final Four, he happened to be in the same area as Wilt at the time, and he said he was about to drafted into the NBA, and the coach had him and Wilt play one-on-one. But what happened was Wilt beat the guy 25-10. So the guy said, man, if high school players are this good, then I don't need to be playing in the NBA. And he went on to be a tractor engineer.
Damn!
Yo, that's it. We're done. Yo, that's it. We're done. We're done here.
Hey, and I have it.
Done.
You know what it is? His name is, B.H. Bourne. He was a Kansas University standout. B.H. Bourne elected as the most valuable player to 1953 NCAA Finals. Chamberlain won 25-10. Bourne was so dejected that he gave up a promising NBA career and became a tractor engineer. Said if there were high school kids,
wow.
Like him, I figured I wasn't going to make it.
He'll put his name out there. Just like Austin said, man, we out of time. We're going to go out on that note, man. Happy birthday to the legend.
Well, hold that, Dad, the last one. Last one I'll mention real quick that I've read about Wilt today is that Wilt Chamberlain also beat the Sun in a staring contest. So we're going to end on that, man. Happy birthday to Wilt, man. Thanks for joining us in the War Room for our Wilt Chamberlain special. We'd like to extend another happy birthday and rest in peace shout out to the legend himself. Also, special thanks to Philly basketball guru and Hall of Famer Sonny Hill for providing us his accounts of the Big Dipper. Tune in Thursday at our regular time and regular place for our usual show. We'll be talking NFL preseason, everything else going on this week in sports. Holler at us online. And in honor of Wilt, let's go out to another Overbrook legend, Dev.
Drums, please.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. But back then I didn't really know what it was. But now I see what happened is the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly we be out in the park, a place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise, honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turn around and see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yet, hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kissed. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch, while the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop and fly from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through, 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.